Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at the Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at the Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please, and find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio, starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
Number 8. I guess, wait, fall is not official yet, but I mean, after
no,
Labor
but
Day,
it's basically, it's after Labor Day, it's fall. And the weather in New York, like this last week has been perfect.
Yeah, it
it's been breezy and like 80 and
no more AC. Yeah, like it's like right on time. Like right after Labor Day, it just like, it dipped down about 10 degrees.
Yeah.
And it's been, you know, like I said, it's been beautiful, sunny outside. Happy Labor Day to everybody. I don't even know what the hell that
means.
Whatever
right now.
That means, you know.
Nothing. It means
like,
nothing.
Like Future said, whatever that means. How y'all doing? We took a week off. I was out of town and you know, it just got a little hectic in the holidays, so we took a week off. But that's cool. You know, everybody takes a week off at the end of the summer.
Because, you know what? You know, some pods are, they do seasons.
Mm-hmm.
Some pods, we tend to run the whole year. So every once in a while, we do all talk to each other like, all right, this week ain't really on.
Yeah,
we try to make it work when we can. Last week was weird for me because I was back and forth, not really feeling too hot. And I was like, let me go get tested. But, well, let me back up. The first thing about me, and I think I've talked about that on here, is that I'm susceptible to ear, nose, and throat stuff.
Yeah, yeah, you have said that before.
So multiple times a year, I'm used to getting a strep or a flu or a head cold, congestions, and my allergies present as tightening in the airways, you know, headache. They present the same way. So I'm never sure what the fuck is wrong with me. So once Corona came, I was really like, I don't know if I'm sick, if I got Corona, if this
paranoid.
Is normal, Naima shit. Like, yeah. So last week I was dealing with a low grade fever off and on, and like my glands were kind of tender. So I was like, I don't know if I'm getting sick or if it was from being in and out of my grandparents' house a couple of weeks ago and interfacing with people there and the conditions in my grandparents' house, even though I had a mask on, like it's been empty for so long and it's like dust and feces
and
all that nasty shit. And so I was like, all right, this is like Friday. I was like, I'm gonna go get a test for Rona next week. But then I realized that the problem might have been actually one of my rear molars, like an old filling, I think, that because it was loose. Well, it's been loose, and I actually knew it was loose, and I was going to get it taken care of, and I think, but, you know, like, it's allowed, like, not to be really gross, but, like, food particles to get in there, but
yeah,
that molar's infected. So now I'm like, do I have a fever because my molar's infected, or do I have a fever because I just have a fever? Do I have a fever because I have Corona? So now I got to figure out what's what. So I got to call my dentist because they may not even see me until I get the Rona test first. So I got to figure out, which I'm missing a day when I would say to an adult, like, something's wrong, and they would figure out what to do next, because I'm just like, I don't feel like dealing with none of this shit.
Even with the dentist and stuff, I guess they are open, right? They never closed, right?
Not really, they're open. Essential.
They're medical, they're medical professionals.
Yeah, because my cousin's a dentist in Atlanta. She closed her office early on, but she's a pediatric dentist too, so she kind of had to open back up because of kids, you know. So she's open back up. So I mean, I know you'll get it fixed and shit, but it's still whack.
It's whack, and it's a lot, and it's kind of like you kind of feel like, how dare you have to deal with normal like run of the mill health shit in the middle of
this
other shit. Like, really, I gotta deal with that shit?
Exactly.
But yeah.
How you been, bro?
I'm good. All is well. You know, same old shit.
Wait, so Jordan, have they started the school yet? School thing yet?
No, they're actually going to start September 14th.
Okay.
Virtual. You know, virtual. Mm-hmm. She's doing, it's basically 4 days a week. You know, they start at 7:30, so her start time is still the same. Except, obviously, now she doesn't need to be up at 5:30 in the morning.
Yeah, exactly.
But then they're done at, like, noon. which is about 2 hours earlier than their normal school day.
Okay.
They still have access to the teachers, I believe, up until about 2:45 or 3 or something like that. And then all day Friday, they can kind of go to virtual classrooms for extra help and additional things like that. So, you know, again, man, she's fine. You know, she'll be fine. I think she's adapted about as much as one can adapt to this right now. And she's a senior. Yeah. So it's not like she's missing sort of like being in this new school building and things that sort of come with that. I mean, she's looking
at the front door anyway.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the disappointing thing is she's always been a part of like Jubilee and Honors Chambers choirs and the stage plays and, you know, musicals and, you know, none of that, all of that basically got pulled from last year.
Yeah.
So there'll be none of that happening this year. And, you know, we really didn't get any college visits, you know, we're kind of applying blindly.
Yeah.
So she's going to apply to a lot more schools than Justin did. Justin only applied to like 5 schools, but I told her, you know, she should cast a wide net. So we'll look at some various institutions, mostly Black, and you know, we'll figure
it out.
How was her how is she feeling about starting her senior year this way? Like, I remember last year when all of this started in the spring, my heart went out to high school seniors, mostly because that year is supposed to be, you know, so important, and it's one that you really can't recapture at all. How's she feeling about it?
I think she's good for now. I think two things. One, I think the idea that she doesn't have to get up at 5:30 in the morning is absolutely appealing.
That's
insane.
That's real.
I think I got up at like 6:45 for school. Yeah, well, you know, 7:20 or something.
They're in class, like 7:30, they're in the building in class.
Oh, see, we started school at 8.
But that half hour difference is the difference for her. So it's a big difference, right? So she's feeling that. And I think as we start to go on, I think how we open up and what they do with the socialization of schools is going to really sort of impact how she feels. Now, when we get to, you know, January, February, and we're getting to that phase of, you know, what schools have you been accepted to, and you know, all of those sorts of things. And then you start to get into that March space, and now you're creeping up on prom. If we're still at this space, then I think she's probably going to feel really, you know, bad.
Yeah.
Right.
Missing your trip, things like that. But as of right now,
she's Gucci.
To tell her she don't have to get up at 5:30, she is great.
Yeah, that'd be enough. Life. Yeah, that'd be enough.
So I was in Atlanta I was in it for like 9 days working. It was interesting to be, the first time I've been in another city since the pandemic, you know, since March. Yeah, February. That's when I've been in another city. So it was interesting. Like, you know, Atlanta's definitely more wide open than we are. There's indoor dining, every place open, barbershops, gyms. There's nothing closed there. There's nothing closed. One thing I think that might be closed is the movie theaters, I think. But everything else is, you know, clubs, hookah, they popping. But I didn't do any of that. Like, I worked was in the studio a lot. I went out to Piedmont Park and worked out. I didn't go to any gym. I actually like working out outside better now. I've gotten used to it. I went to see my cousin. I went to see a couple of friends. Like, we had lunch and stuff like that. But I was my social stuff was very limited. But I did see more people wearing masks than I thought I would see. I definitely saw.
Somebody was saying that we shouldn't be fooled by what we see about Atlanta because it's really only certain areas.
Exactly. Like, I was literally about to say that. It's pockets of folks that's acting fooled. But in the city overall, you know, Black, you know, I stayed in a fairly white section of town called Virginia Highlands, but I was in Black sections of town also. And I saw people wearing masks. Like, it wasn't just like, oh, the Black people's acting crazy. No. They was wearing masks too. And, you know, kids wearing masks. So like Nye said, it's pockets of fools, but it's not like Atlanta itself is just bonkers, you know. So it was very interesting. But again, even, you know, just to see like in the indoor thing, because I was telling people, a lot of the people, it's kind of interesting, just like, I guess there's certain things that we don't know about the day-to-day life there. Most of them didn't realize up here about us not having indoor dining, about our movie theaters, our gyms and stuff. Not
really? That's surprising.
They didn't know that.
But you know what? It might also be because, like, Long Island has been in phase four. We were supposed to be by now, but we're not. So they just may not realize that and then maybe Staten Island is, I don't know. I think it's just Manhattan and the boroughs.
Yeah. But a lot of them didn't. They thought that we were like them. Like, everything was
pretty
much
open. Oh, hell
no. And I was like, nah, bro, we ain't going to be no indoor dying until at earliest June of 2021. They were like, what? Like, they couldn't even understand what I was saying about the gym not being open and all that stuff. But it was a good trip. I got me a good sandwich from the Publix, but made by
Shout out to Publix Sandwich. I really do miss, that's the one thing we don't have in New York. We don't have grocery store. I mean, we have deli sandwiches, but those
good
grocery store subs.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Them Publix subs. Ooh,
what?
I missed them.
I put like this. I got my shit on the way to the airport. Like, I said, I'm taking this to the crib. This beautiful black lady made it for me. She said, I make my sandwiches with love. I said, yes, you do.
I mean, that's what I miss. Grocery store subs and grocery store sheet cakes. Ooh, it's not like them.
And Publix got the grocery store food, too. They got, like, the fried chicken and all that. And she was,
grocery store fried chicken is also always very good, because it's some black people back there.
The whole shit is black.
Yo, did I ever tell you, about the Whole Foods near me?
Nah.
No.
I don't know who, I don't know what
who
Jamaican lady named Shirley Ann or what Jamaican man named Winston or Errol was back there cooking, but boy, they was getting busy. Like, really? On a regular, they was getting busy to where it was black people at the buffet.
We don't really fuck
with the buffet. Like, we'll dabble.
Yeah.
But not, like, motherfuckers was like, all right, well, I'm just put jerk in this. I'm gonna get mac and cheese. Yo, mac and cheese was crazy.
Wow.
I was like, I told people, I said, yo, this ain't gonna last long because it's too expensive. I said, yo, I know what mac and cheese costs, bro.
Yeah.
They ain't gonna keep doing this.
They dump an extra cheese in there.
Yeah. Make it
You know, so yeah, so I had a good trip. I don't know when I'll be traveling again. The other quick thing.
You said the airport was like empty.
That's what I was
though,
about
right?
to say. Both airports. When I went to LaGuardia, I left two Fridays ago, you know, prime time, 11, I think my plane was like 11:50. So, you know, prime time to be in an airport. It was at Delta, it was three people, including me. So it was two people and me at the counter.
That's crazy.
Two people and me, like, The clear and the pre-check is useless because there's literally no one in the line.
Mm-hmm.
You just walk up and you just go through. Like, it's, you know, there's no one at the my plane going down was probably half full. Delta doesn't do middle seats.
Delta is still doing 50% capacity and no middle seats.
Yeah, exactly. So the plane was like half full. There's no food. They give you like a little baggie of stuff. If you want liquor, they're only giving you wine and beer and in the little bottles. They're not even pouring in the cups and stuff.
Right.
And then coming back through Hartsfield on Sunday, same thing. You know, it's a little more crowded than the LaGuardia because it's a big airport, but still very empty. Just you're breezing right through. There's no. So the travel is still way down. I don't know when it's going to stop. People are not traveling anywhere like they
used. I also don't know. I mean, but there's a couple of things, right? Aside from even just the healthcare concerns, there's two things. Business travel is down because
there is none.
It's eliminated, right? I was going to say. It's eliminated. Mm-hmm. And especially for us flying out of LaGuardia and JFK, that commuter traffic was so much the daily traffic.
I read an article about what you just said too, about how because of there's no business travel now, like that's really the main thing that's killing the industry. It's the hotels and stuff. Obviously, you have people who do vacations and stuff, but it's the people who would, like, you know, I got to fly to Chicago for a day. I got to go to,
Atlanta, run out here real quick.
I got to go to LA for 2 days. That's all obviously all dead. So the hotels are getting murdered, the flights are getting murdered, the expense account stuff, all that, all that. Also, I don't think about is completely
Oh, absolutely. I believe it. Cause I know how many of my friends are having the conversations just on the back end of like, so like most affinity programs have already said they're going to honor wherever you were at through 2021 because you couldn't travel this week, but just quick shout out, you know, so, you know, any of y'all have either of y'all had a GoGo Air membership, the Wi-Fi?
Yeah, I did.
So I did. I forgot to cancel it. It just wasn't what I was thinking about. These niggas was just like still billing. Wow. And so everybody else was like sending emails like we recognize this whatever or suspending billing. I happened to notice the bill like in June and I was like, y'all been billing me this entire time? Are you serious right now?
No, knowing you can't go nowhere.
And I had to fight to get the refund. I had to take it to Twitter because they were just like, well, our terms and conditions say you need to cancel so much in advance. I was like, nobody's traveling. It's a global pandemic. Are you kidding me?
Parking at our office tried that shit with us.
Really? Still charging? Yeah.
Nah, they went there because we had them on auto pay.
Right.
Oh. And so I saw the auto pay. I was like, y'all bugging the fuck out. I was like, nah, B. And then I told our office manager, I was like, nah, take that card off auto pay.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
They're going to take it in blood.
They're going to take that money. Money if they can.
I was like, that's insane. So like I said, once I took it to Twitter, I actually heard from somebody and they were like, we'll get right back to you because old dude in customer service was just quoting me terms and conditions. Yeah. But anyway, but a lot of my friends are already talking about like, you know, their status and how many miles they're used to booking and all that stuff. So I know that for the people who do this like all day, every day, like I'm in Chicago every third Tuesday.
Yeah,
I'm
exactly.
in Detroit I'm in, every whatever, yeah. whatever. That's gotta be a hit. But then for the people who do just do vacations, a lot of people just ain't got it right now. Like, I feel fortunate that I'm in a position where even in the midst of the pandemic, I'm like, all right, do I want to slide off to Mexico? Do I not? Cause I can, if I want to, but that's rare. You know, there's a rare number of us who are in that position
that can move like that.
Yeah.
Let's jump into a little bit of, TV. Now I'm gonna let you go first because I know you wanted. We haven't talked about P. I've said before, I've heard nothing but great things about P Valley. I am gonna watch it. I just didn't get to it, but I don't have an aversion.
Stars?
To it. I have stars. I just didn't have an aversion. I just didn't get to it. But I've heard. I do want to watch it because he is great.
I understand that because I have told you that about shows after which you lambasted me about me saying that I have not had a chance to get to them, but you understand. Yeah. I also want, I think you guys have picked up by now that like our TV conversations are totally dictated by Jeff's taste, which is fine, But I also realized belatedly that we never shouted out the last season of Greenleaf. I can't remember.
So it was Greenleaf, this is it? That was the last season, period?
That was the last season, period. They wrapped the show up and they did this season was
fantastic. I've heard it was great, yeah.
It was fantastic. So I just want to acknowledge the Greenleafs. I can't say too much without it being a spoiler, but it was a complete close. It was wrapped up and it was done really well.
Okay.
And it was very full circle. This last season was just full of all kind of mess and whatnot. But just a really great, like just the best of Church and Black and mess. All together, like Southern Church Black mess, just all drama
matched up.
Oh, it was fantastic. Great, great, great show. And I think like that was five seasons. I think five seasons is fine.
Five is enough.
Because I really do think that is when most shows try to push past that. That
it starts to get weird.
It starts to get weird, falling off. And then so P-Valley also wrapped up its first season, eight episodes wrapped up on Sunday.
Okay.
And it has already been renewed for a second season. And same thing, like just, so the, let me find her name. The creator of P-Valley, she's like a distinguished, honored playwright, right? Before she came to TV. And you could just tell the layers that she gave the Katori Hall, the layers that she gave the characters over time, the story. I mean, it could have just been like no shots to the Players Club. The Players Club is a cultural classic, right? But imagine the Players Club like elevated a little bit in terms of like character motivation, in terms of relationships between the characters, and just fleshed out a little bit and letting these characters be more complex and multi-dimensional.
You also hear that the girls on the show, aside from being, you know, everybody says they're like all incredible looking, but they say that they really learn to dance.
Yeah, and they also a lot of them do their own pole work.
Yes,
so
I'm saying,
So Jamaica Craft is the choreographer who's largely known for working with Sierra and a lot of other people, but I want to say C is where she like kind of first made her bones for real. But Jamaica Craft is a choreographer. They have a stunt person, and most of the girls do most of their own pole work, which I just think is really dope as well. And it's also like, I think I might have said this on the show, what I love about it is that, you know, we see a lot about strip clubs, and like, you think of like the Atlanta strip clubs, like the baller strip clubs. And this is like this was the equivalent of a hole in the wall strip club. Like, it's big in space, but the energy is hole in the wall strip club.
I got you. Yeah.
So like, there's a lot of times they'll show the girls being in the clubs during the day before the club opens. If you've never been in a nightclub or a strip club when it's closed, it is like, there's no more transformative type of space. Like, it's clubs raggedy. When they're closed,
they look terrible.
Even the most luxurious clubs, when they're closed, they smell like sour alcohol.
Yep.
It stinks. The banquettes look dirty. Like, it's just not, it's just a completely,
the rugs
are nasty. But strip clubs even more so. Like, and I was looking at one scene, because you could tell when they were in there, like, the banquettes had utility tape on them, but at night you don't see none of that shit when the lights go down and you got strobe lights and shit on. So even that little detail I thought was really important. So yeah, it's a great show, and it's got its moments. Like, one of my friends is criticizing. So I Isaiah Washington is one of the characters.
Okay.
And his dialect slips from, so it's in Mississippi, but his dialect is Creole half the time, and then it's Georgia sometimes, and then it's like Colonel Sanders sometimes. Like, his dialect is all over the place. But everybody else seems to be trying to, like, seems to get it right. So it's good. It's definitely worth a watch, and I'm excited.
I'm going to watch. I'll be ready for when it comes back on. I caught up, because that was the only whack thing about my Airbnb in Atlanta. Your man had, like, 6 channels. Like, I didn't watch the games.
Sean's face. Sean was like,
bro, he didn't even have TNT, bro. I was like, are you kidding me? Like,
you gotta start moving with your fire stick.
Yeah, man. Or you might have to, like, ask that. Like, I know, like, you might have been on autopilot.
Not even thinking that.
Because who doesn't have basic cable?
Right.
Dude, it was crazy.
Yeah.
Like, so anyway, I didn't see anything. So I caught up on Lovecraft Country yesterday. I watched both. I saw 3 and 4 back to back. Again, I just loved the show. It was interesting this time because 3 and 4, episode 3 was kind of like Nye said, the way they seem to be doing it, you know, I guess they're almost halfway through the season now. It's like the episodes all tie together, but each episode kind of has its own theme. The theme isn't always carried over to the next episode, although there are plot points that move forward. So in episode 3, the theme was like horror. It was like a horror film.
Yeah.
You know, like, and it was had all the tropes of a horror film with the, you know, the scares and the da 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 da, and, you know, and supernatural shit and all that and stuff. And that it was really
dope. I think is when we lost Sean.
Oh yeah, bro's brain.
He was like, "Yeah, I'm
Brian done. Watching this shit." He ain't watching.
He's like, "I'm done.
It's over." And then episode 4 was like watching Indiana Jones.
It was like Indiana Jones meets Goonies.
Yeah,
the director actually said that this one was an adventure story.
Yeah, and it was. It was.
I really fuck with it though. Like, I fuck with it. It was very dope. And the other thing about this show is that the details are so good that I almost missed them. But for example, there was one point where someone was going to Journey's house, Letitia's house, and in front of the house, somebody had spray painted black with an arrow pointing in the house. And that really happened in Chicago. Like, I saw the reference.
Yeah, that thing that happened to her is based on a thing that happened in Chicago, like one of the first black families to move to the north side.
Exactly. And that's, that's exactly where she is, on the north side of Chicago. And then there's not to, by the time, y'all should have seen it by now, the shit came out on Sunday. But there's a moment where Tick said something about feeling like he's in Journey to the Center of the Earth. What I missed was that the kid in the library earlier was reading Journey to the Center of the Earth. So, like, the details are just always...
So I caught another.
Random reference to Juneteenth. Random, like, just weaving
all of stuff together.
Yeah.
I caught another detail that was ill, because I watched the. I didn't catch it actually. Let me take it back. I didn't catch it. What I did was I watched the thing on YouTube where they kind of go through the stuff, the stuff. And so you remember an episode? I guess it was. Was that 3 or 4 when they were doing the Ouija board?
3.
Okay, it was 3 on the Ouija board. There was all the kids doing the Ouija board.
Yeah.
So one of those kids is Emmett Till.
Oh.
Because he's the kid that said, "How is my trip going to be?" And George says, "Not going to be good." That's actually Emmett Till. Emmett Till had his nickname was Bobo. So in the show, they call him Bobo. And remember, the show's in Chicago.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
Didn't catch that. I didn't see anybody talking about that either. But I did see the mention.
Well, can we get more of that and less of the motherfucking on the ground?
But, I did catch in episode 3 to go back to that. So they were talking about somebody named Michael. And they said, no, he's calling himself Martin now. And they said, is he still engaged to that white girl? And he said, no, they may marry a colored woman. That confused me, because I was like, is there some shit about Martin Luther King?
It is about Martin Luther King. Martin Luther King was dating a white woman on the low, who apparently was his real love.
Right.
But he ended up
Look at Sean's face. No, his name actually Michael? He was a junior. Or maybe
I don't know if Michael was his middle name or something. But
it's happening right now.
Listen, Martin Luther King dated a white woman on the low, like after college and all that shit. And he was, apparently that was his true. Because didn't he go to Columbia or something for grad school?
Or seminary, maybe.
Yeah, I think he did. I think he went to Ossie Morehouse undergrad. Apparently he dated this white woman on the low. That was his true love.
Oh, he was born Michael King Jr. Why didn't I know this? Yes. I'm bugging out right now.
Martin. Mm-hmm. And then they made him marry, they made him leave the white woman because he was going to leave the movement. He said, you can't be married to a white woman.
I swear to God, born Michael King Jr., I've never seen that before, ever, anywhere.
There's a lot of shit in there. They're very thorough with their shit. They are very thorough with their research and stuff.
Because I was like, that's about Martin, but Martin, is Martin real name Michael? Because he's a junior. So how was he Michael King Jr. switched to Martin Luther King Jr.? That's crazy. And I also didn't, because Martin Luther is... a reference, like Martin Luther is a reference in and of itself. So that's why I was like, how was he born something? Okay, now I gotta look into this. But yeah, so those details in, I fucking.
And those details are in every show. Right. Like, there are all these little things you'd be like, oh shit, Nelson. Anyways, I really.
Oh, he went to a seminary in Pennsylvania. So
Pennsylvania, yeah, and that's where he met the girl. Okay. That's where he met the girl, yeah.
Wow.
But needless to say, I love the show, love Lovecraft Country. You know, if you're not watching it, it's only episode 4. The episodes are usually longer than an hour. Take a little time to catch up. But if you're not watching it, except for Brad, no, he ain't going to watch it. But
He went to BU, so it could have been even more.
Yeah. I knew he went to a white something. It was BU, yeah. Anyway, watch Lovecraft Country. It's an incredible show. And it's kind of like too many details to kind of go over in the podcast, but it's great. I also watched
And Baldwin was staying at the house too. You peeped that, right?
Yeah.
That was cool too.
It was lush. I also watched I know y'all didn't watch it. I watched Black Love.
So
I know bro hate that show.
I like that show, but I have to be in the mood for that show. I almost never watch it in real time since the first episode. I have to be in the mood for it. I'm gonna watch it, but how was it?
You know what I don't like, and you know, it's only two episodes. They did them back to back, I guess on Saturday, so I watched both of them. I don't like how, And I think this is a black people thing in general. How, especially we on TV, you know, we get on TV, we're like, don't be telling all my business. I ain't going right. back. So everybody's story, for the most part, is just so fairy tale-ish. It's so, oh, I met her and I just knew. And but you know, we were just friends for like 9 months, and she didn't even know that I really liked her like that. And then one day we just kissed.
Usually the first episode, though. By like episode 3, they start getting to the ugly shit. Like,
yeah, so now we're going to 3 now. So I guess
okay, like where that couple was talking about how somebody burned the house down, somebody got shot, somebody got killed. We start getting into that shit. Yeah.
The only one that kept it gully on these first two episodes, Dana Dane was actually on there with his wife.
Okay.
And Dana Dane, when he met his wife, she was married. And they were messing, they messed around. They messed around and stuff for a while. And then she eventually left her husband for Dana. They've been married for a very long time now. But I just don't like the fairy tale aspect of it. And kind of like the fairy tale aspect of how they present a lot of their relationships. Now, I'm not supposed to say you're supposed to get on there and curse each other out or whatever. But right. as we all know, there's ups and downs to everything. And they just present it all as just like everything is sweet. And great.
Go ahead, Sean. Sorry.
I was just going to say a little bit of that could be production. I'm sure it is. I'm not in there, but it looks to me as though they're doing sort of a long standing interview, right? That like no one's changing clothes. Mm-hmm. So they're talking maybe like 3-4 hours. Right? Mm-hmm. And so they're extrapolating what they need for this particular episode, and they will build up to those things. And so that's why it presents as the fairy tale portion, because they've taken that section out to make it linear with the other couples.
I got you.
Is where we started, and this is kind of, you know, where the meat and potatoes. And then when they get toward the end of the series, or end of the season, it'll start to talk to you about, you know, this is how we make it work now.
Yeah.
That's probably the tool that they use. I don't necessarily hate the show, but I don't like the like. It's not an enjoyable watch for me.
No, why is that?
Well, I just, you know, look, man. I think it's incredibly difficult to tell your story in this confined space and time, right? Like, there's really not a lot of context here. You know, I remember. I think it was the season before that, and it was like Miss Tina, Mr. Richard was on.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And the way people light into
like smallest details like, of glances. It's
not a fun watch because of that. You know, it's like everything is sort of hypersensitive. Everything is sort of you say one thing, you say one, you know, misstep. It's like it's crazy. People go crazy for it.
They get a divorce tomorrow.
Or no, like calling you fucking dumb and couldn't have been me. And you know, meanwhile, your shit's raggedy.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Your shit, yeah. your shit
just
baby
raggedy. Daddies that don't yeah. take kids.
Yeah,
kids
your shit just as ragged as everybody else. Yeah. But it's easy to sort of identify those folks and sort of, you know, chime into them. And also, man, I do think there's a bit of put on for the camera.
Yes.
You know, I think there's a bit of put on for the camera. There's, you know, there's a camera there, right? Like, yes. I don't know. Like, it's not like you're at the barbecue and you telling your you know, you at the spades table talking about how y'all met.
Yeah.
That's not what's happening.
It's definitely a long form. Like, you definitely got, like, lights and interviewer sitting directly in front of you while you're on the couch for however many hours. I've noticed that this season specifically, to Sean's point, the black Twitter intelligentsia is kind of lighting up black love on some like highlighting two different things, highlighting, you know, all the men who are married to light-skinned women,
the colorism.
And then highlighting like the number of stories. Like, there's one woman, I can't remember whose wife it is, who is basically like, she got his name tattooed on her ass even though they were split.
Because when
he came back, she wanted him to know that's still his.
Yeah.
And it was like, okay, can we normalize not doing this goofy shit? Yeah. You know, but I think that there are broader examples than the ones we see here. Because there have also been some instances definitely where it's like, We still in the storm. It was some football player and his wife. I don't know if y'all remember where he had been cheating.
And the
whole interview, I was like, this bitch don't like him still right now. She about to kick this nigga out as soon as the camera.
She was cutting her eyes at this nigga, looking at him weird and shit. And he was sitting there like, thought she was, he was basically like, damn, all right, I'm still fucked up in the dark.
Right.
Yeah, I remember that. I can't remember what player was, but I do remember that scenario.
And let me just say one last thing, and this is in no defense of producers, but people get to pick and choose if they want to be on television.
This is true.
Producers are not sending out paper bags to say, show me a picture of your wife in order to pass them on to production.
Correct.
Like, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
And this idea that those are people that's what happens, like, sometimes that's going to happen. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know what they're black women, they're married to black men. They're light skinned. I don't know what the fuck to tell you. I really don't know. But there's not all I guess what I'm saying is there's not always an agenda.
Yeah. And also it's just people jumping out the window because the next episode they should have previous to, and and even on this episode, there were dark skinned couples. Like, it wasn't that was kinda like the trailer. But if you watch the show, it's there's every,
and over the seasons there has been.
Yes, I'm saying there's every hue. It's like people just looking for something.
Because they home and they bored.
They home and they bored. And shit sidebar. So I saw, this is how bored and goofy these young niggas is getting. I saw a conversation, I don't know if you saw this the other day, about a week ago. Some gal got on the Twitters and said that Janae Aiko was doper than Sade.
Everybody you just have to ignore that. Like, there's no need to even engage in opinions. I've learned it's hard, but every once in a while I'll be about to fire off a response back to some 20-something year old, and I'll be like, Naima, just
let it go.
Just let them be over there with it.
So I saw something today. It had to be young people. They were showing Bomani posted a clip of "Wipe Me Down," and he was like, "This is one of the best songs ever made," or something, you know. And then Some guy and girl got on there. Was like, well, I didn't even heard this song. They must have not been playing this in New York. And then the guy was like, yeah, because they didn't even start playing, you know, Southern records in New York until Wayne dropped Lollipop. I was like,
what?
What are you talking about, man? Like, is this
somebody who didn't go outside until Lollipop? What?
Obviously, what are you talking? This is silly shit.
I'm gonna name that crew. I'm gonna name that section of Twitter "Bless Your Heart" Twitter.
Exactly.
It's gonna be "Bless Your
Heart." I just had to realize, I can't argue with y'all niggas over shit that was happening when you were like six. You don't know
exactly.
No,
you really don't know better.
But there really is this lack of. I continue to be astounded, and this is not the first time we've talked about it here, but the lack of acknowledgement for anything happening before it was conscious, before you were conscious of it.
Exactly.
Like, and I know we all have, all of us at our different ages have had, like, the pride of, you know, But I think that we had an acknowledgement of, like, nah, shit just, ain't just start, like, with me right here, right now. Like, there were things that existed before me, or just acknowledgement of, like, I wasn't old enough to know about
it. To know, exactly.
Right? And that seems to be missing. Like, it's like, what do you mean? That never existed before I came out. So you mean to tell me that whole Lil Jon, A-Town Stomp, that I was doing in the club every week didn't happen because
that shit just
didn't exist. Like,
exactly.
Come on, man.
It was goofy.
Yeah.
Also, it's been very interesting to watch kids watching the game and stuff. Like, because now it's on Netflix.
The UPN shows.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Because they're like, oh shit, Melanie and Derwin, and I'm like, oh yeah, I guess y'all was like too young to see it when it actually was out.
Or process like the situations. That
exactly. To see what was
when,
going on.
When Girlfriends drops, it's going to be a mess. Because I think that people didn't realize, Mara actually did a really good job of making those women nuanced characters, but they were actually all terrible in their own ways. every single Herald one of them Herald. On purpose, like on purpose though, right?
I think it was on purpose. A consistent theme with her characters. They're really not good people.
I think Mara,
we know about Mary Jane,
but it was like this was the precursor to Mary Jane. Even Joan, who I loved Joan Carroll Clayton, but she could be very like self-absorbed and selfish and just on her own shit. I do think it was Molly. There was a Joan and Tony, Molly and Issa before Molly and Issa. And I think I'm curious to see once that show comes out, those converts, what the conversations are going to be.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about, we didn't get to mention
Chadwick. Monica and Brandy.
Chadwick. Chadwick Boseman. Monica and Brandy both. Yeah, actually. So we'll just mention Chadwick Boseman passing away of colon cancer last week at the age of 43, which is just insane. Yeah. And you know,
week before last Tuesday. Yeah. Yeah.
We just come to find out that he was making pretty much every movie he made while dealing with this.
He was diagnosed with stage 3 in 2016. So that means that, you know, arguably
even
pre-diagnosis, he had done all his Marvel stuff, with cancer. And then at least Infinity War, Endgame, and I don't know if he would have been in chemo yet for Black Panther, because that he might have foregone it just because of the energy he needed for Black Panther. But I have to imagine he was going through some kind of treatment by the time he was doing Infinity War and Endgame.
Yeah, there was I don't know if you saw it, there was a clip with, I can't remember his name, Parks, I believe it was his last name. He was a guy that played Lester in The Wire, and he was in Five Bloods. And
He was saying that Chad had a lot of people on set for Five Bloods.
His wife was like rubbing his feet, and he had like a special nutritionist and people doing massages. And he said he called his girl or something at the time.
His wife was asking how Chadwick is.
And he was like, yo, I think he's kind of, you know, let the little Black Panther thing go to his head. He called him precious. Yeah. And then he obviously realized what happened. In that interview, he was like literally crying. Like, I'm so hurt that I let that perception, you know, of him like lead my thing, and not realizing how bad he was, you know.
He said people were literally there to care for him.
Yeah, literally. You know?
Well, the other thing is that, you know, Chadwick made this choice. Ryan Coogler didn't even know. So he made this choice not to, you know, we don't know what his cast members may have known or not known, but it surprised me that Ryan Coogler didn't know. But, you know, he made this choice to not share it. We didn't even know he got married. That was the same week that Jacob Blake had been shot and gone through surgery. Like that had happened. Jacob Blake had happened the week prior. That was the same week of the lockout, the strike, which we didn't talk about either, the NBA strike.
It was a really heavy week, right?
And I had been kind of, I had been kind of only half really processing everything because it was just a lot. It was just a lot. Like, I was like, I can't watch Chris Webber's speech right now. Like, I can't watch, you know what I mean? Like, I just knew that if I let too much in, I was just going to be like a mess. But when the Chadwick news came, at first I was stunned because it came late Friday. It was like 10:30, 11 o'clock Friday night. Mm-hmm. And at first I was stunned, but then when I read how long it had been since he had the diagnosis, and just the realization that like we really made that nigga be Black Panther, like that, like we made him carry.
He was T'Challa.
He was T'Challa, and we really asked him to carry like us on his back, like for real. Every little Black boy, Black girl, Black person. The 60, 70, 80-year-olds who were left to go. I saw Black Panther like 5 fucking times. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's like, I think about that, and I think about how we were commenting how tired he must have been because he was doing like 2 straight years of promo after like 2 straight years of filming, because he went straight from Black Panther into Endgame and Infinity War.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, when I really thought about how tired he must have literally been, right? Yeah. Like, yeah. Weary, tired, body failing. And the fact that he chose to just hold that with a quiet dignity and just push through it because he realized it was so important beyond him, beyond it being just a movie. That really broke me because that level of sacrifice, I was like, we put the whole fucking race on that nigga's back.
And yeah, and he was like, I can't let my people down kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I was just curious, you know, it's just a really small thing, but I was just curious how he was able to bulk up and keep that weight because he's, you know, when he did Black Panther, he gained.
That's what I was saying. I think that might have been before he started any kind of chemo or
something. Oh, okay, okay.
Because he was also doing all his own stunts.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. Like, he was.
Which is crazy.
Doing a lot of shit, you know?
Like, just but I want to be clear, because one of the things that was happening is that, you know, niggas gonna be niggas, and it was like, you know, Chadwick Boseman did these many movies and played Black Panther, even though he
had
three cancer. What's your excuse? Shut your ass up.
Yeah.
It is not to glorify pushing your body to extreme lengths in the face of illness, in the face of disability like that. I want to be clear that we're not celebrating that because not everybody can do that, right? And that is not the only, it's not only in those instances that we need to acknowledge somebody's illness and disability and pain and limitations because they overcame them to surpass feats that even normal people could do. So I just wanted to be careful to not make it seem like we were celebrating, like, and he conquered cancer and shot these movies.
It worked until he died kind of thing.
You know? It's remarkable. And for him, that was his choice and it was made with intention and it was made because of a legacy that he had already decided he was carving out for himself. Because he was also on, he was under contract to play like a black samurai.
Oh, wow. Next.
I can't remember his name, but like the story of one of the few like black samurai. So he was being very intentional even before his diagnosis. He always been intentional in his roles.
Okay.
So I wanted to point out, and you know, now of course motherfuckers want to like rename the Howard Auditorium and there's a petition to like replace,
In
a Confederate
town, right?
Statue in Anderson. Yeah, with him. Like, okay, there might be a plaque or a monument of Chad put up at Anderson. So y'all are familiar with Clemson, right?
That's where Anderson is?
Anderson is like next door to Clemson.
Okay.
They not replacing no Confederate monument with a monument of a black man in Anderson, South Carolina. That's not going to happen. My granddaddy's people are from that part of South Carolina. It's above Greenville and Spartanburg. That's not going to happen, but, you know, there might be a plaque or something put there, you know, where his people are from. But I think Chad knew his time was limited, and it feels like he put things in place. The president of Howard sent a note out to alumni saying that they were about to announce something big that they're still going to complete, that they didn't, you know, working with Chadwick. I'm guessing it's an endowed chair or something like that. But yeah, he completed the work. I do think there's a lesson in intentionality with that, right? Like 43 years. I think that's the lesson of the losses we've seen this year, with starting with Kobe, even with Dre, even with Congressman
Lewis,
even though he lived so much life, right? Like an intentionality and like a like put everything in this. In the time you have that you can, right?
Yeah.
Like all of that. If there's something we're gonna take away from that, I think those are the things.
What'd you think, bro?
I mean, listen, I was sad, obviously, not because of, you know, any sort of superhero-ness, but like, you know, I just turned 44.
Yeah.
You know, and I think often about, you know, men of our age and even those of us, you know, much like the things that black women go through, like in terms of giving childbirth, right? You think Serena would have all of the access, And you would think that you would think that Chadwick would have all of the resources and all of the access, and he still didn't catch this until stage three. Mm-hmm. You know, and you know, the lessons that I took from this was, you know, some things can be for yourself. You are not obligated to give the world every piece of you.
True.
That's real.
And the idea that, you know, he either owed or there was some level of expectation for him to talk about what he had been going through. Yeah. I would also be very careful of, you know, putting this idea, like you said, putting the idea that he was sort of conquering cancer. This might just have been a man looking to secure as much as he can for his family that he leave behind.
That too.
Right, like in a just a very like we're again we're sort of putting our ideals on the shoulders of a man that might have simply just been going to work.
Right.
Right. Like I know I have all of these people that depend on me. I need to make sure I can leave them as much as possible.
Yeah.
When I'm gone. And yes, his legacy matters to Black people. It matters in Black culture. But again, this is a man who had a family, and they are going to be suffering a real loss. And you know, the wake up call for me was, again, you know, being tested for colon cancer is not something that happens under 50 years old.
Right.
It is something that I've been afraid of. It's even for me, I just went to the doctor. I was basically told, you know, I have to do like a stool test for you before you do the colonoscopy. If you're under 50, but like, again, I just don't understand why that at 44, considering all of the things, that you would not be considered for that immediately.
Yeah.
But I mean, this is, you know, kind of is what it is. And unfortunately, man, he took a lot on his shoulders.
Yeah. So, you know, peace and love to him and his family and you know, his wife.
And one last thing I want to say, when he was not well and we saw that picture of him not being well.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things we have to remember, man, is that, again, when people are like, hey, you know, I didn't realize he was sick. Like, he doesn't fucking owe you that.
Yeah.
He doesn't owe you.
He didn't have to post it on IG.
You know? He didn't have to post. Right. You know, we're so used to everything, every intimate detail and every intimate moment being shared. Like, niggas will literally post a picture in the hospital bed before the anesthesia is going over their face.
Tubes and it's
like
about to go in.
Like, you know, and it's like, it's okay. He shouldn't have been required to say that in order to be given just respect. Like, just...
Yeah.
And on the flip side, I was one of the people who was quick to not want to put that on him, because I remember, I don't think I ever said it publicly on the timeline, but there were definitely some chats where, like, pictures of Chadwick have been floating for a minute and folks are like, he doesn't look well. And I was just like, I'm going to hope it's for a role, because I think we're all so quick to see anything happen and be like, oh, something wrong with them. They look sick. So we're quick to just jump either way. And I was just like, until he says something, I'ma just notice that it looks,
I want to just mention real quick, like you said, just real quick, as you know, it's kind of old news now, but Brandy and Monica had their verses. Finally, it was long awaited. Everybody kind of wanted to see this happen. The highest rated verses as of, you know, to date, they stuck around 1.1. They got to the 1.2, but it was definitely a solid 1.1.
On IG, just on 1.8 on
Apple, right?
Yeah.
Something like that. So it was huge. Everybody watched it. It was interesting to me to see them, you know, together now as, you know, grown women. I think they're both either 40 or very close to it. Both have been married and divorced. Both have children now. So they're not.
Was Brandy actually ever married? Brandy was actually never married.
I thought, oh, she didn't marry old boy that her
that was a lie.
Father?
That was a lie.
Oh, it was a lie. Okay, okay.
Yeah.
But I know she was engaged at one point to like.
Yeah, and then that ended.
But you know, they've both been through some stuff, and so they're not those, you know, 17-year-old girls that we kind of remember them being. And it felt like to me, obviously, there's been a lot of back and forth, you know, like sub stuff between them over the years, probably between their camps over the years. And they're very different personality wise.
You know? Always have been.
Always have been. Monica's that, you know, Southern girl from the, you know, got, you know, hood tendencies. And that doesn't mean she's a bad person or like a ghetto person or nothing. But, you know, she has some street people in her life, obviously, she's a supremely talented girl as well. And Brandy's a girl who grew up basically in Hollywood, you know, from a young child with acting and
child star with a momager.
Child star with a momager and into singing and became a megastar singing and, you know, has done TV and, you know, I don't know if she's actually been in any movies in a theater, but definitely TV movies.
She's done because she did Chicago. I don't know about, she did Roxy Hart in Chicago, but okay. I don't know about, I don't think Brandy's done a movie.
I don't know if she's done a movie, but she's done TV.
Aside from TV movie.
Yeah, the Cinderella thing, she was in The Game, she's like, you know, she's been in a Tyler Perry film, she's done some stuff. Oh, she was in a Tyler Perry film, that's right.
Okay.
But anyway, so they're very different people, and it was interesting to see them kind of sit down and, those different personalities kind of pop out at different times. And I felt like at the end of it, I don't know if they'll ever be best buddies.
They don't need to be.
Exactly. So. I was going to say, I feel like it was good for both of them to do this. Brandy said that they did get some time alone to just kind of talk about whatever they wanted to talk about. That'll be between them. And I felt like it was good for them to do this. And now whatever stuff happened before, I feel like that's over.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean they're going to be besties and fucking all that, but it just feels like we're grown. Look, that shit was whack. And now, like, we did this thing. We were successful doing this thing. Everybody wanted to see us. We had a good time. And, you know, now we can just kind of move forward and leave some of that negativity in the back. That's how I felt to me.
So, the first thing I will say is that, like, I'd never really paid, like, obviously I would hear about the Brandy Monica stuff, but it always felt like hype to me, right? Even though I had seen, I'd seen where Rodney had said before that, like, they really didn't like each other, like, they had to be separated on the set at a video shoot, stuff like that. So I was like, all right, so they did. So what it really looks like is that it was comparisons that were created by the media and fans, because the unique thing about Brandy and Monica is that Brandy, Monica, Aaliyah, and Usher are part of this little group of young R&B singers. They were the only ones of their age.
Mm-hmm.
And they all came out, the four of them came out roughly within a year of each other between 94 and 95. Usher, then Aaliyah, then Brandy, then Monica. Okay. Between 94 and 95. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, the older, it was either like everybody else was either like Tevin Campbell was a good couple years older and like Tevin and Shanice and stuff like that. So they were like this, their own little club. And that's why it's so hard to say who Usher's peer is, because he does not actually have
any direct male
peers. Mm-hmm. And obviously like Aaliyah's gone, but he's the only one who has been consistently stayed on a major label, releasing music, charting, et cetera, this entire time.
Mm-hmm.
But with Brandy and Monica, they are very different. And I think what probably happened was, as kids, they just didn't like each other. Like, Monica was probably like, this little ditty bitch.
Yeah.
Here. Brandy was like, you know, Brandy's probably like, she's ghetto and like looking down at her. And so there was actually beef there then. I ended up doing a recap on, like, to examine whether their stuff was real or fake for Zora Mag that went out the day of the battle. But, like, Monica did punch Brandy in the face at the VMAs before they went into rehearsal. Like, but she was 16, but she did. Yeah, she blocked her.
Yeah,
and, you know, she denied it for years, and then she finally admitted it. And then they said they had squashed it when they got together to do this other duet in 2012.
Yeah.
They said they had squashed everything. They said Whitney dying helped them squash it. But then there were a few years where it seemed like it was just Brandy keeping it going. And what it really felt like was like Brandy was really responding to fan bullshit, but putting it on Monica.
And also it felt like Brandy was so, I don't know if protective is the right word, but I'll just use it for the sake of what I'm saying. Protective of her relationship with Whitney. That jealous. She did jealous.
And jealous. So she, I think
she hated.
Good.
She hated that Monica.
Monica also had her own relationship with it.
Yes, and yeah. Because Brandy felt like I was her little sister. Monica was like, "Yo, she fucked with me too." Like we always lived in Atlanta. We'd see each other a lot. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know.
And Monica has a story about because the other thing that Monica had in common, and I actually think this is why there was like a. Why Brandy has in the past, I'm not going to say she does now, has in the past felt threatened because Monica as a personality, even as a vocalist, is even her story, it's closer to Whitney's. Mm-hmm. Monica's tone is closer to Whitney's. Monica was under Clive. Rowdy was a JV under Arista. Clive EP, Monica's albums. And Monica was like this girl who Clive wanted to shape into a pop princess, but she was out here doing hood shit.
Yeah.
And I think that Whitney saw kinship in that. So, like, Monica tells this story of, and what's crazy is that she told it in a, I watched her tell it in a radio interview with Brandy, and Brandy's face kind of like went blank while she was telling the story. But then it came out on her own special later, and Brandy, like, was doing sub posts and shit. But when, Monica had a drug dealer boyfriend who committed suicide in front of her when she was 18. And Monica, and like right around that same time, Monica's grandmother died. And I think this is when, for Monica, probably she was like, all this other shit is silly and I don't give a fuck. But after that span of time, Whitney came to Atlanta, no phone call, no nothing, but came to Atlanta and like rolled up to the neighborhood where she knew Monica lived and literally got out the car and was asking people on the street, like, which one of these houses is Monica?
Yeah, which house is Monica at?
Which one of these is her house? And Monica was like, she stayed in Atlanta for a while to make sure
that Monica was,
was good. And since then, like, that changed their relationship. But Monica was never like, my shit was more special than your shit. You know what I'm saying? She was like, this is how Whitney was for several of us, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that, I mean, Brandy to me, because that versus is the longest time the two of them have had to be in a space and only interact with each other. Like, there's no radio host for you to talk to.
Yeah. There's nobody in the middle.
There's no moderator. It's just y'all two. And that's part of, I think, the awkwardness that we saw. Like, I think that Brandy was trying to make it light and cool, but kind of kept low-key reverting to the your ghetto, and I'm not jokes. And I think Monica, after a while, was like, all right, bitch, like, we can get off this shit. And I don't even think Brandy was doing it on purpose. I think she, like, when she yelled for Sarai to, like, close her ears when Monica was playing sideline host. Sarai's 18 years old. What are you telling her to close her ears for the word ho when Ray J is her uncle?
Exactly.
So anyway.
That was crazy.
I do think there was still, Brandy to me looked like the girl who had been overly sheltered and protected throughout her childhood and been told that, like, she was better than, more special than, more unique than. And now as an adult, she doesn't know how to relate to other adults. And she doesn't know how to let the guard down and just be herself. Whereas Monica has been like, fuck it, I know who I am. I'm gonna lean into that long time ago. And I think that Brandy wants to get closer to that and doesn't quite know how. So she has a journey to take. And, you know, I wish her well. But I was definitely like, oh, I could tell she was, and I've heard that from people before who've been in the studio and stuff with her. They were just like, oh my God, she's so annoying. I don't think it's intentional, bro? But she has a journey ahead of her.
Did you watch it?
You're on mute, Sean.
Sorry about that. I watched about 2 minutes of that. you know, like I said to y'all before, God bless them. I wish them well. I'm glad that they had those numbers. I definitely don't doubt that they were the highest rated, but, like, you know, what this Swiss guy, and it's 178 trillion impressions. Get the fuck out of here with that. The numbers is bullshit, and ain't nobody gonna make me think otherwise.
But they did swamp. But they did swamp the top 40 singles and album charts the next day on.
Oh, like, I'm sure
all their stuff. All their stuff ran to the chart.
Look, I'm 100% positive of that. Aesthetically, it is not a pleasing watch for me. Mm. And I'll explain why.
Yeah, this one wasn't, the energy was weird.
Well, it wasn't just the energy. It's a lot of production.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have the same quality that I felt. Like, so this isn't even just about, I mean, obviously initially we had, the issues, right? You're on IG, you had people going in and out.
Right.
It has some really, really good ones, but I felt like those early ones were way more organic and way more shit talking, way more having a lot of fun. And I felt like post Beanie, and I felt like that was the sort of the difference maker. Like the verses after those felt very much more production. Now the Kurt and Fred versus was, I think, very different because they have such a history together.
Right.
That's not, and not just a history together. There's a certain, I don't want to get too preachy, but there's a certain anointing that comes when you get around church folks that know each other.
Well, and also they were in, I think the difference with Kirk's and with Snoop and X is that in both of those cases, like, they were in Kirk's house and they were in Snoop's house.
I was going to say, so yes,
you weren't
in much smaller places.
You weren't in a studio space or, like when they said they were going to be in Tyler Perry Studios, I thought they were going to, like, maybe be on a set, but they I knew they weren't going to have an audience, but they were, like, in a cavernous soundstage, which also, made it feel very far away.
That's the only thing you're going to get out there.
Yeah.
Right? Like, there's almost no way for it to not be that because it's designed for these, high-level productions. But long and the short of it is, I get it. It's not for me. I'm very, very happy for them. You know, the jokes were flying. I saw some really good TikToks the next day, with people dressing up as them. And, it was fun. I'm happy for them. It's not my bag. I was not about to sit there and watch that for 2 hours, but God bless.
I get that.
All right. I want to mention Jessica Krug, who was pulled to Rachel Dolezal. She's a white Jewish teacher of African-American studies. What did she teach again?
I don't know. I just know she was...
George Washington University.
Yeah, and she was also in some fellowship programs. Like, she was in a Schomburg fellowship program and some other stuff. But basically, in a Black Studies Center academia space, as was Rachel Dolezal.
Yeah, passing herself off as a Black woman.
Afro-Latina.
Afro-Latina woman. And
from the Bronx.
Yeah, exactly, from the Bronx. There's many, tweets or emails and stuff where she's claiming, me as a person of color, blah, 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 and how dare you, getting on other people of color for them, or in her mind, not being Black enough or not being, for the Black experience the way she felt like they should be. Right. And a lot of her students, because I saw a picture of her, and I was like, what? How the hell? She looks like a white lady to me. And apparently a lot of her students over the years, I guess, how those been teaching, have been constantly questioning her. And, having beef with her and just kind of not being comfortable with the fact that they looking at this white woman saying, I know she's not Afro-Latina, she's white.
Because I'm always cautious about the optics thing, and I think this part of this is me being a Black person from the South. Like, I have family who straight up looks white, right?
So I'm
careful about that, and I even think, I know a couple of Afro Latinas who look like or just straight Puerto Ricans, whatever, who do not consider themselves of the diaspora at all. They consider themselves like white Spaniards, basically. So I'm always cautious. That's even my thing with Sean King. I'm very cautious about just optics. But what somebody did say was that she overdid it. Like, she would come to meetings in the morning and look like she was going to, like, a salsa club. You know what I mean? Like, it was almost like putting too much on it type shit. But what's fascinating to me, and that's why she seemed to come out on her own volition, but actually it was because there was an investigation being done into her. What was tricky about her that was easier to unravel with Dolezal is that she has apparently no connection at all whatsoever with her white family and hasn't in her entire adult life. Like, on some, like, she's been doing this since she was 17 or 18 or 19 type shit, right? So this literally was, like, this has been the whole adult life that she created. But I find it interesting, and I'm not the only person, I said this on Twitter, but I'm not the only person who said it, that when these white women, people, not that we hear this that often, but that both she and Rachel Dolezal, and if it comes out that Sean is actually white, I don't hang my hat on that with him because I think he's problematic enough whether he is or not, that they do so to occupy elite places in black spaces, right? So it's like black people who are white passing just want to, like, have a better credit score, get a better house, live in a different neighborhood, be able to get promoted on the job, whereas these white people passing as black are like, I want to be the chair of the entire black studies department at this prestigious university and be able to judge these other people of color on their own cultural history. So it's like, there's even a supremacy in that. Like, I actually want to pass as black so that I can judge, so I can more freely judge these black people and educate these black people on their own fucking blackness. And I'm just like, it's such a mind fuck. Like, I noticed that you don't want, somebody was like, how come you don't want to be black and, like, go get pulled over? You don't want to be black and, like, you know, being some gang shit. You don't want to, you know what I mean? Like, it's only, you want to be black and be able to still, like, boss black people around and be a better black person than the black people. Like, I don't know. It's twisted and annoying and disgusting.
What do you think, bro?
Well, I was very shocked when I saw her picture.
Mm-hmm.
Because the first thing I was like was, you know, did anybody look at her top lip? Where's the pics of a grandma? Like, I that is so one of the things.
Who's her peoples?
That's I was just about to say that. So one of the things that black country folk, who your people? Where your people from?
Right.
Exactly. And if you cannot run down at minimum where your grandparents are from, like what region they're from, I've met so many people just doing that. Hey, Ma, you know so-and-so? Yeah, Sonny Boy, we went to school together.
Right.
I know him.
You know that's your second cousin.
and so I've always grown up in a world like that where, you know, when you connected with people, well, even on a friendship level, you would kind of ask, hey, like, where are your folks from?
Mm-hmm.
And so that was what was very surprising to me. I read her Medium post, and I gotta say, even that was very dramatic.
Yeah,
I agree. It was almost done it was actually a very white woman of her, to be quite honest.
Extremely.
It was very bearing her soul on the cross. Mm-hmm. And it was done in an attempt to ultimately not catch the furor of people.
Yeah, it was a preemptive strike. Like, let me just prostrate myself so y'all can't.
Yes.
Cancel me.
Yes, that's exactly what it was. Well, like, first of all, you weren't a thing to be canceled, right? Like, we don't,
right?
Like,
we can know
start
we
there. Yeah. We can really start there, right? And that's fine. But, like, let's take a chill pill.
Okay? Yeah.
But, you know, I'm always, you know, fascinated by the amount of people that go up for people. Aside from her living this lie, I am just fascinated when, you know, you saw people staunchly defending her.
Mm-hmm.
And people would staunchly defend her. And I'm just like, do you even know this person? Like, whether she was black or white is irrelevant. Like, clearly, This is not a person that you know. Clearly,
right.
This is not a relationship that has any depth to it. And, you know, we've all had friends or coworkers or people like that. And it's like, you know, we all right. But, yeah. Like, you ain't going to bat for them. You'd be exactly. like, nigga, did I think he stole $20 out your purse? No, I don't think he stole $20 out your purse. But
right.
Anyway, if you told me he tried to grab your ass in the copy room, I can't. I'm probably exactly. gonna believe you.
Yeah.
I don't know that nigga like that.
Sound like him.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
could
yeah,
be. Yeah. So I was just very shocked at that. But again, I mean, I was shocked at the people defending her. I was kind of shocked that she was able to get over on so many people for so long. But I don't really liken it to a Rachel Dolezal situation, who I think was very consciously towing a line mm-hmm. in a way that she was very clear in what it was for her. Whereas I think this person here took on this entire new identity, complete with a fake Bronx accent. Like, it was fascinating.
Yo, I watched a YouTube clip, or I listened to a clip of her talking something. And I was like, what is this? She sounds like a chick from the Jersey Shore trying to be quote-unquote ghetto. Like, it was just, the whole shit
it felt a little, and that's another thing. You know, a lot of times, and I just want to say this one thing, a lot of times, our desire for having alignment with allies and having connections with people allow for us to not have a level of discernment that we would normally have.
Yep.
And it is because we're sort of looking for those connections, and we sort of want there to be, you know, these quote unquote outside people sort of rallying around the message that we're looking to send. And we do a little disservice when we're so eager to bring those people in and champion them.
Yeah, we just give more kind of passes without really kind of like looking a little deeper just to see who they really are. It's like, yo, he white, like he could dance, like he's down. It's like, I don't know if he's really down.
But I think in the case of somebody passing though, like with Rachel and with what's this chick's name, Rebecca? Somebody? What's her name?
Jessica. Jessica Krug.
Her, whatever. I think part of it is that there's two things. The first thing is that these women are moving, like I said, in academia, which even when you're talking about Black academia, there is still kind of white controlled spaces, unfortunately. Mm. So that's one thing. But the second thing is, it's so unusual. Like, we're used to white people wanting to be down. Yes. Like wanting to have access, wanting to be counted, you know, as coming to the cookout, wanting to be quote-unquote an honorary Black person, all that shit. We're used to that. But we're not used to white people pretending to fucking be Black. Like, the enormity of that, right? That you would choose to walk this path, this life, when you have all that privilege available to you, I think is still something so astounding that it's hard to actually think that it's a real thing, because it's like, who? Because think about it, how many real instances of a white person pretending to be Black can we actually think of, aside from Rachel and this chick and maybe Sean King? Like, how many?
It's not a lot.
Exactly. Like, I can't really think of
it's more the other, it's more the other way.
Exactly. It's more the other way.
Us passing, because we figured out other life is much easier to do.
Exactly. And also that we have, like, a lot of instances of biracial people who, like, later was like, oh, like a Wentworth Miller or a Slash. It's like, oh, wait, your mama's Black? Like, that type shit, right?
Yeah.
So I think that it is still so, it's still such a foreign concept that my indication might be more like, this chick ain't really grow up around Black people. She just maybe just discover her Black, or something. I don't know. But I definitely don't think my first instinct, even if this person looks white, looks whatever, I really think it would be hard for me to say to myself, this person is lying about their ethnicity. I think it would be hard. Maybe with Latinas is not. Maybe with,
I mean,
but it would be really hard for me to
See, I don't
to make that leap.
Like, look, I make the joke about the lip because it's fairly obvious now, right? But aside from that, right? Like, she, like, so can she pass on a physical appearance basis? Probably, right? Like, so there's no doubting that. I guess my question really becomes, like, there just seems to not really be a level of connection to people before we just take them in.
I feel like she was kept at a distance, which was part of the problem. She got complaints from a lot of people who worked with her because she was marginalizing other young Afro-Latina researchers and people working in her department.
She had a lot
of complaints against her.
I guess also...
The Rachel thing was more surprising to me because she was actually like president of the NAACP. I was like...
It was some weird-ass chapter. I mean, it was some weird-ass chapter, but still. But I mean, look, I get it and I understand, you know, people can be fooled. I don't want to come off as being like the guy who's got all the answers and I know all the tricks, right? But like, ask a couple questions.
Yeah,
poke around a little bit.
Just say who your people?
Like who your peoples? Like what you know? And to me, there's a level of authenticity that really kind of comes on. Like, first of all, I don't know anybody who has, you know, grandparents or pictures of their grandparents that doesn't show them off.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? There's certain basic cultural things. It's also like in the music business, right? Like if you meet a person now and they're like 45 years old and they're like, yeah, I've been in the music business, and you ask like four or five friends, like, do you know this dude?
Yeah.
And nobody knows him. He's probably scamming, right?
But you also will be. So I can think of a person, a very specific person, and both of y'all might actually realize who I mean once I say it, but I'm not gonna say her name. But she's been a president. She's been senior executive. She's been managers to big. She's been a manager to big artists. She is a very light skinned black woman, and I know she's black, but she is the whitest black woman I know. There's nobody who actually necessarily calls her out because she still gets senior executive jobs, and she's in one right now where actually part of her role is about like culture and diversity. And I was like, really? Her ass? Mm. But it's like people just don't fuck with her. You know what I mean? So it's more like, I know who she is. White folks fucking love her.
She's
the kind of executive that white people love, and she mostly moves in those circles, right? And it's just kind of like, yeah, I know who she is, but I don't fuck with her. Like, and I think it's more like that. Like, it would never be a scam. And I think that's what was happening with old girl. Like, other people were like, yeah, we didn't fuck with her because we thought she was off. But yeah, you're at Georgetown. Like, it's a white control. Even in Schaumburg, it's a white control space. You know, like,
the reality is, people operate how they operate. I feel like her apology was, I don't even have the word to articulate it properly, yeah, but like,
it was very, like, it was okay. Also like circular, right? Cause she was like, you know, there's no excuse for what I did, but here's an excuse for what I did, but I know there's no excuse for what I did. I don't even know what my life is going to be like after this, but I don't deserve it because I've said that other people...
But that's a frustrating thing.
I feel like her apology was, in her mind, like she still was playing that role. Like she felt like... It was almost like the apology was what she felt like a Afro-Latina...
She was trying to be a woke... It was a woke apology.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It was still... Well, this is what a black or Afro-Latina woman would say. You should cancel me. Like, nobody would say that.
She's going to sign a book deal.
Oh, absolutely.
She is going to go on a redemption tour.
Mm-hmm.
And... she will be presenting as a white woman that's mm-hmm. an ally at It'll some be, point you know, in the
my story. My story is why I did this. Oh shit! Hold on.
What the hell was that?
I don't know what the hell that was. Something popped up on the internet. Shit. Sorry about that. I want to also just mention real quick, Dr. Dre and his wife getting a divorce. Now I don't really want to talk about the divorce. That's their...
Are we going to talk about these stupid-ass Twitter niggas counting money that they ain't never going to see in their entire life? Yes, I'm so tired of these motherfuckers.
Yeah, like, you know, they're getting a divorce. Maybe her name is Nicole Young. Hopefully, maybe they'll be able to work it out in some kind of way. I don't know. But, yeah, so she submitted her expenses, which were...
For temporary spousal support, meaning yes. until they can work out...
They work out the
actual divorce. Right yeah. details.
And that totaled basically $2 million a month, which included, you know, expenses for clothes and laundry and education and entertainment.
Well, the entertainment one said $900,000. The line items, I'm just interrupting because you were saying what it included. California's spousal support petition is a standard form with preset budget line item categories, mm-hmm. which means that there are only these categories that you can plug in, whether you make $30,000 a year or you're worth $800 million, right?
Yep.
So the lawyers, obviously, I guess, got to get creative in what is contained in those line items, because that seemed to be what set people off. Okay, sorry. I just wanted to explain.
No, that's
that.
Okay. So I mean, the main one that people jumped out the window on was her entertainment expenses per month was $900,000. But the bigger thing was like it was very interesting to me because you definitely got the fucking, you know, the niggas that's working 4 to 12. No disrespect to anybody working 4 to 12 who's jumping on there like, there's some bullshit. I would never. It's like, nigga, you're not ever.
You will never in your have life.
These issues. And then, but there was also life. a lot of women. Like saying, oh, she making us look bad. And it's like, there's no us.
Right.
There's no us here. There's no we.
There's no us.
There's no us. Like, and people not understanding, I think, a lot of things. Number one, how much money Dre has and continues to accumulate.
Generate, yes. Yeah, money like, is not finite. He has passive and residual income coming in every
forever,
day.
Forever.
Yes.
And also what, they've been married for 25 years, I believe?
They've been married for 24 years. 24 years. So basically 25.
Yeah, so, and Dre's obviously, you know, had money when they met, but he's, you know.
They got married before the Aftermath deal. And I tweeted this. I was like, y'all saw the goddamn movie.
He was actually kind of fucked up.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm like, y'all saw the movie. He got beat in his first two deals. He got beat with NWA. He got beat with Death Row. They got married the year before the Aftermath deal happened. So, and she was an attorney. So if you think, I noticed, I ain't even a lawyer. And I know that when you dating a nigga and you can read a little bit, they're going to have you read everything they about So if you think he didn't have her rereading all his contracts.
And then giving advising, him advice on how to get the fuck out of
it. Yeah, giving him counsel on like rereading over the Aftermath deal. Probably over the years, like, babe, can you take a look at this real quick?
No, kind of
can
shit.
You do this?
Yeah.
But somebody asked me, okay, so two things. First of all, what I tweeted was that me trying to break down these line items is above my pay grade, because what I do not know is anything about what it feels like to have a 7-figure a month living expense.
Well, that's what I was about to say.
I don't know what that means. Yeah.
Let me just say this real quick. That's the reason I brought up the length that they were married, because in the time when they got married until now, I see Dre's like grown exponentially, professionally, all kind of ways. He's got, you know, tons and tons of money now.
It's also the Apple stock. But yeah,
of course, it's Apple stock. Yeah. But my point is, in the process of that, him growing and running with Jimmy Iovine and some of these other, you know, a lot of tech guys and everything else, he's, his circle is some other shit. And his wife is also now part of that circle. So there's a lifestyle and there's an just a way that you're living in that circle that she has to maintain, because she ain't friends with old girl who do nails down on Crenshaw no more.
Right.
She's friends with Jimmy's wife and maybe, you know, Tim Cook's husband and, you know, this one and Rita Wilson. And, you know, she's dealing with people who are like Steven Spielberg. I forget her name. Oh, Steven's wife's name. But whatever. But she's dealing with people like on that
Jessica,
level.
Jessica, I think her name is.
Yeah, yeah. People on that level. And so, like, she's maintaining. Like, she has lunch at the crib. It's a thing. Like, it's a thing. It's not like, y'all, we go order some fucking, you know, Roscoe's. I mean, maybe they do that.
These niggas taking she down at the Costco, getting sliders and Hawaiian rolls.
Word. And a bag of wingettes.
Yeah. Right. Like,
and Sean has said this here before. you don't, even if your thought, which is wrong in and of itself, is that she should downgrade because she's divorcing from Dre, you don't downgrade, Sean has said this like multiple times, you don't downgrade from a seven-figure lifestyle to a six-figure lifestyle overnight. That is a process, because that means that there's properties being sold, there's staff mm-hmm. being laid off. Like, there's mm-hmm. a lot of shit that has to happen, right? Unless all your shit just gets seized. But in this case, like, somebody actually asked me, people see millions and they put it in the context, like $2 million a month seems a lot. Yeah, nigga, because your current standard monthly expenses are $2,500 a month. That's why yeah. $2 million a month seems a lot. $2 million does not seem a lot when your average monthly income is $197 million a month. Like, that yeah. does not seem, and that is Dre's average monthly income. So it's like, I said, y'all cannot put this in the context of what $2 million means to you. Andre Young is damn near a billionaire. You can, and they've been married for 25 years. 25 years is a whole career.
And children.
Is a life. You got children. So it's like, it's really not for you to even question. Like, first of all, I'm sure she pays whatever attorney filled that form out a lot of fucking money.
Yeah.
And he knows what the fuck he's doing. And I know on Twitter, jokes is better than facts, but it's like, somebody asked me, does she deserve $400 million after 25 years of marriage? I was like, does anybody deserve $400 million? Who deserves? Like, there is no such thing as deserving $400 million. Like, $400 million is like, the only reason Dre has $800 million is, yes, he's Dre, but it's also because that Apple stock split. You know what I mean? Like, there is no, like, and very worst case scenario, Dre still has $500 million and he's still making more money. Like, what are you talking about?
That's what I was going to say. Like, yeah. I remember there was even kind of talk when Bezos, him and his wife divorced as well. And obviously he's got $200 billion. So, but anyway, my deeper point is.
And like, Bezos made all that shit back already. By the
way. Exactly. And his wife really helped him. Like, she was his lawyer. She was there from the beginning, but that's a whole different conversation. But my other conversation with this is, and we've had this conversation before, whenever these things come up, it just shows how much niggas hate women. Because it's like, feel like she just doesn't deserve it. It's like, why doesn't she? Like,
why doesn't she?
Just because she's a woman. That's really what boil it down to. Well, go ahead, bro.
Because even after 25 years, apparently you're a gold digger.
What's fascinating to me is that, like you both said, there's really no concept for a person who has the sort of average Joe salary. They just can't fathom that. You know, it's just not, they're not able to compute that. I've had people say, yo, you know, what is she doing with $100,000 a month in mortgage or 900? How is it 900,000? I'm like, fam, like, they're not, you know, like, they're not going to the Bahamas, you know, staying at the regular spot.
Spirit
Airlines. That's just not how any of this works, fam. fam, they're eating, they're probably eating. I'm like, a barbecue might run them in the six figures.
Right.
Absolutely.
You know, we're going to have a couple friends over. Yeah, I'm like.
Right.
But
they're not asking, Sean, I'm sorry, but they're not asking why Andre wears a brand new pair of Air Force Ones every single solitary day as though they're Hanes t-shirts. It's only a question of what she's doing with the money. Never a question of what he's doing with the money.
And listen, what I recognize is that people, I don't want to say disappointing because it wasn't disappointing, but really enlightening was that, you know, niggas would have really been cool with her getting a fucking two-bedroom condo.
Yeah, yeah.
And 1,100 square feet.
She's
going to have a Camry with about 60,000 miles on it, some balding tires.
A maximum with the Bible open in the back window.
I'm like, bro, do you understand the levels of shit that's going on here?
They don't. But I
recognized that early on. It's like talking physics to a wino. Yeah. This is also what lawyers do. They go for an extreme ask. So they can negotiate. She's probably not going to get any of that stuff that she asked for. But here's the thing. She's going to be fine. I promise you, my nigga, Dre is going to be fine. Dre is not going to be borrowing money from me.
Dre could live. That was my thing. I was like, why are y'all so concerned when none of this, like, it's like Sean said sometimes, he's not all of a sudden going to have to switch brand paper towels to the store brand. This nigga ain't suddenly going to have to be like, oh, let me not hop on the jet today
I think it might have been either Derek Jeter or somebody, or maybe Chris Paul. There was an athlete that talked about that. They were like, you know, I think they took less money to go somewhere.
Right.
And they were like, yo, the difference between 180 million and like 200 million, like your lifestyle doesn't change.
Yeah, it was Chris Paul.
Yeah, like your lifestyle, like the
thread. It's Monopoly money at that point.
I was getting ready to say,
it's conceptual money.
Dre is not liquid 800 million money. Like, there's not a room with $800 million in the crib that he wallows in like fucking Scrooge McDuck. Like, that's not how it works. And again, he's going to be fine. I'm not going to cry for her. He's going to be fine.
He's going to be fine. She's going to be fine. The kids are going to be fine.
They're probably good right now.
She could take, and then somebody was like, well, she had 20 years to stack money. Why didn't she do that? I'm like, how do you know she didn't? But also, what does that have to do with her divorce settlement? Like, the fact that you would suggest that after 25 years of marriage, anybody should be walking away with the equivalent of the food you wrapped up in a paper towel and put in your bag during the party is insane. Like, so during my marriage, like, yes, some people do save money during the marriage in case a nigga pull some shady shit.
Yeah.
But the idea is that if I've been with you for 25 years, and I said this, I was like, y'all the same niggas who be like, I just want a woman I can build this empire with, who gonna help me build and who's gonna see the potential in me and help me get this money and let's do this. And then now after 25 years, y'all like, well, what did she do to deserve?
Yeah, what did you do to deserve any of this?
One point something percent of this per month for, and I was trying to really break it down for people. I was trying to be like, listen, Dre's estimated income is $127 million a month. A year. If you make $127,000 a year, this is your spouse asking for $2,000 a month. That's actually lower than, like, in New York, that would be lower than average. So it's like, the fact that y'all see million and y'all just automatically go to a million as a lot of money, it's a lot of money for your ass.
Well, because I don't think they are understand. I really don't think they know how much shit costs. Like, that's the other
correct
part.
Correct.
Right? Like, they have no real grasp.
They still getting cakes from down to Miss Mabel down to the church.
Yeah, and so you know, God
bless. Especially now when you have staff and security.
Dude, I was getting ready to say,
and all of that maintenance at multiple houses, car fleets, like, all that type
what
shit.
What are we talking about here? Vacation homes, fucking
insurance is probably sky high.
Your cell phone bill is like, my nigga, you got the most international plan.
Exactly.
Like, because at any given point, you know what I'm saying, you somewhere.
And you might have a whole staff on your cell phone bill. Like, who knows? Like, it could be any. That's the thing. My thing is, like, I have no idea.
You have. I'm not questioning that. Well, that's the other part, right? It's like there are these sort of broad strokes. And when people see things like the entertainment bill, they quickly assume that she's just out here basically hiring.
Shoving club live.
Nah, she hiring Drake and shit to come through to the backyard.
Right.
Through the Tootsie Roll.
The Tootsie Slide.
And also not figuring, like, these are monthly averages. Like, if you've ever done a budget, it's your monthly average. So it's not like us, where we be like, we go into the movies or we go into a game. Yeah. It's like, we taking the jet down the motherfucking, the Côte d'Azur for the entire month of goddamn July. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's a whole, I don't want a yacht. It's a whole different thing.
But like I said, it's just interesting that, like I said, that it just comes down, a lot of this just comes down to, you know, hating women or not thinking women are deserving of anything because, you know, he just did everything. And so she should just shut the fuck up and take whatever she's parceled out and be happy with it. Not knowing that she's
a lawyer. And I assure you, there is no judge that will be using Dr. Dre as the precedent for somebody coming to you to get that $75 a week that you said over there,
I assure you,
that is not going to be the case.
And it's crazy because even when, and the other thing is that I'll say this because Jeff, you're guilty of this sometimes. When something happens, people could be quick to be like, If this was the other way around, women would be in arms. So, like, somebody said to me, you lied. He actually was, I think, from the UK. He was like, you lied. We're having a conniption when Adele had to pay her husband. I said, actually, no, we weren't, because we don't actually know what Adele had to pay her husband. It was sealed. People were just making speculation based on the reports of what her estate was worth. So basically what was at play. And also Adele and her husband were together like 2 years. You know what I mean? So that's also like a whole different thing. And then somebody was like, if this was Stedman coming after Oprah, y'all wouldn't want them to have nothing. I said, again, apples and oranges. Stedman and Oprah been together 30 years. I'm sure there's a palimony situation in there somewhere. But also Stedman was like 40 something with a career and grown kids. No,
and also, and also,
what are you talking about?
And also, like nigga, you think Stedman finna be out here at the fucking Motel 6? Like,
aside, I'm sure Stedman's
nigga, Stedman gonna have a roommate.
No, and like, even if him and Oprah like had a fucking knockout drag down, like 30 years, nigga, you don't think
30 years? You don't think Stedman, and you don't think we would think like. I don't think anybody would be like, Stedman shouldn't walk away with something. But the other thing that people are taking out of framing here is like, fault matters, right? So like, she's getting divorced from Dre with even though the cause is irreconcilable differences officially, apparently like there's been threats, he's been abusive, he told her to get the fuck out. Like there's shit going on there, right? And we're also just not used to even seeing a situation where the woman is the primary earner in terms of like public celebrity divorces, right? Mm-hmm. So there's also like, we can't really talk about if the tables are turned because there's so few examples. Like we saw Holly had to pay her dude child support. I don't remember anybody being up in arms about that. We was like, well, whatever. But it like,
is, yeah. Aisha Tyler had to pay her husband.
Aisha Tyler had to pay her husband. Yeah.
And she cut the check.
Yeah. Man, what's the call? I had to pay too. Maybe Sherry Shepherd had to pay old boy.
Sherry Shepherd. Now, see, that I was on Sherry's side because he seemed like he was scamming.
He was
And with Mary and Kendu, we were mad because Kendu cheated and Kendu was trying to get Mary to pay child support for kids that weren't hers.
Yeah.
You know, so that was like, so that's different fault. But like, Larsa Pippen, when Scotty froze her accounts, we was like, well, bitch. So much of that, you know what I mean? So it's not,
you know.
I'm gonna tell you. So it's not always down the sex lines for women. I think that's my whole the sex and gender lines for women, which is my point. But fault matters. So even with all this shit that Dre's done out here, the fact that niggas be like, I don't know why she thinks she deserves anything, niggas. That's 25 years. She's 50 years old. 25 years is a long fucking time.
Yeah.
Like I don't understand. Like that's. What going into a marriage, that's what's
actually crazy to me is that you would like you have the kind of money like that and you would begrudge someone like the most basic fucking necessities.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like
not saying like you ain't gonna get it back.
It's also not like you're gonna feel it. Yeah. Relatively speaking.
Yeah. Sure. So I just found that a fascinating conversation, you know, whenever it comes up, like, again, a nigga working, you know, down to the Walmart is like, man, shit, I ain't giving up my nigga.
They be so aggrieved for these niggas who have money.
Ain't nobody coming for that $7,300
They be so aggrieved for these niggas. Like, my niggas is about to have heart attacks over Bezos' settlement. Like, you can't even conceive of what that money looks like. Meanwhile, like I said, this nigga done made the shit back already.
Yeah.
It's whatever. So
we're gonna wrap it up on that note. We're gonna wrap it up. Happy fall. Whatever the fuck whatever that means.
Year's basically over. I thought it was interesting. Go
nine again, man. September.
It is.
Nine do that shit from start for January. It's February. You know the year over. It's Valentine's Day, nigga.
Valentine's Day, 4th of July, year's over.
But this year especially has been like a wormhole. Like, this shit is a wrap.
I don't know what's going on.
This shit is a wrap.
Every day is Saturday this year. Yeah. But we're gonna wrap it up on that note. We're back. We're gonna keep rocking out through the fall, and we'll see y'all next week.
Later.
Peace.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com and follow us on Twitter @poplifepodcast.